We have talked a lot on this program describing how economic disparities play out between minorities who tend to be poor and whites who tend to be more affluent. It's not just a question of haves having more to spend. It's also a matter of the have-nots being charged more for the same goods and services. ProPublica is an independent nonprofit news organization that produces investigative journalism in the public interest. In a report co-published with Consumer Reports, ProPublica says that there is a sharp disparity between the two groups in the cost of auto insurance. ProPublica data editor Jeff Larson contributed to the story and joins us by phone. By the way, he is part of the ProPublica team that just yesterday won a Pulitzer Prize for public service for a collaborative report with the New York Daily News. So nice to have you with us, Jeff. Thank you, and congratulations to you and yours for that honor.
Yeah, thank you. It was a big day. We also were a finalist for another project that we did, so it was quite the day.
That is terrific. We just had a segment which talked about how journalism has changed, and ProPublica has certainly been a big part of that over the last several years.
Yeah, and this story is a good example of that. We worked with people at Consumer Reports to investigate car insurance. And what we found is that there were wide disparities among similarly risky white neighborhoods and minority neighborhoods.
Is that, shall we just say what it is? It appears to be out-and-out discrimination?
I think the way car insurance is traditionally thought of, or insurance in general, is if you live in a riskier neighborhood, you get higher prices. But what we found when we compared those two neighborhoods, one a white neighborhood and another a minority neighborhood, we found more often than not that minority neighborhoods were being charged sometimes twice as much, or 30% higher than anywhere from 30% to twice as much compared with similarly risky white neighborhoods.
Well, you looked at the situation in four states, and Missouri and Illinois being two of them. Give us some sense, an overview, if you will, of what you found in the two states closest to where I'm sitting right now.
Yeah. In Illinois, the disparities were the starkest. We found 33 out of 34 companies that we analyzed were charging more than 10% for minority neighborhoods compared with similarly risky white neighborhoods. The last one, the 34th company, was charging 9% higher. In Missouri, the disparities were also as stark. We found 21 out of 25 companies with pricing disparities that weren't justified by the underlying risk. And these are national companies like Geico or Liberty Mutual or Auto Club Enterprises. These aren't just local car insurance companies. These are companies that have ads on TV and don't seem to be pricing to the underlying risk in a neighborhood.
Are we talking primarily about premiums, or only about premiums, or we're also talking about payouts when claims are made?
We're only talking about premiums here. So the amount that they charge, your annual premium that you pay for liability insurance in particular. Liability insurance covers property damage, covers when you hit another car. So it covers the property damage and the bodily injury if you hurt somebody else when you get in an accident. But what we did is we compared that to the amount that the average amount that car insurance company is expected to pay out in a zip code. And when we compared those two things together, when we compared the premiums they charge versus our measure of riskiness, we saw these disparities.
You know, just as an aside, there's been a lot of research done here in the St. Louis area on disparities in health care amongst various zip codes, and they found that in some of the less affluent zip codes that the life expectancy was 18 fewer years than those in the more affluent zip codes. So this really does have a big impact, doesn't it?
Yeah, one of the shocking things that if you look at the trends in minority zip codes, it does look like they're pricing to risk in minority zip codes, but risky white neighborhoods seem to get a huge break. So it's relatively, as risk goes up in minority zip codes, premiums also go up. But especially when we look at Missouri, when it gets to the tail end of the risk, the most risky white neighborhoods, they seem to be getting a huge break in terms of what it looks like they should be pricing.
What were the other two states that you studied?
We studied Texas and California, where we asked all 50 states whether or not we could get the underlying risk data. And these four states actually provided us with the risk data. And Texas and California also showed disparities, but they weren't as stark as they were in Illinois and Missouri.
So you basically made the decision on the availability of the risk data. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, you can't. I mean, we wouldn't be able to test the hypothesis, which is, are car insurance companies pricing based on risk? We wouldn't be able to test it unless we had the overall risk data for every state. And 46 states plus D.C. all told us that they don't collect the risk data. So the oversight agencies that are responsible for making sure that car insurance pricing isn't disparate like this, don't even collect the data that they need to collect to test these hypotheses.
What are the insurance companies involved in your study saying about what your findings?
They say that they wrote an op-ed in an outlet called Insurance Journal, which said that they have private data that shows that it's fair. It's fairly priced, to which we say, well, we looked at the best available public data, and if you want to publish that data and give it to us, we'll happily rerun the numbers and see if the disparities still exist. We were able to find one bit of private data for nationwide in California, and when we analyzed that, we still saw a similar disparity looking at their internal risk data, not looking at the statewide risk data.
I have some quotes here from the Insurance Information Institute, which is rejecting your findings, and not too surprisingly, I guess. I'm quoting here. It says, insurance companies do not collect any information regarding the race or ethnicity of the people they sell policies to and do not discriminate on the basis of race, calling the report inaccurate, unfair, and irresponsible. That's the
sure. I mean, you don't need to. We're not saying that they're putting in, if this is an African-American neighborhood, charge them X dollars more. We're merely pointing out that there is this wide disparity. It's sort of a runaround around what our story actually says for them to. We never claimed that they were actually taking race into account. We just saw that there was this disparity between minority neighborhoods and white neighborhoods.
I have an email here. I'm just going to read part of it to you because it falls right in line with everything that you said. After much searching, she's talking about a 12-year-old Chevy, Blue Book value $2,800, and writes, after much searching, the best liability-only insurance rate we could find to insure that car was $580 a month. That's almost $7,000 per year, more than double the value of the car. I did some research. We plugged in the same car information, just changed one thing, the zip code, to Creve Coeur, which is a more affluent community here. The best rate dropped to $240 a month, about $3,000 a year. That's precisely the kind of thing that you're talking about.
Yeah, we profiled a number of drivers both in Illinois and in California in our story, and we found that, even though they were relatively safe drivers, it was the car insurance was stretching their ability to pay to get to jobs, and one of our characters, one of our the people that we interviewed, actually, he had two jobs and he needed. He needed a car to be able to get to his job, but the amount that he was paying for car insurance was, way more than a similar couple in a whiter neighborhood in Chicago.
So the peripheral impact, among other things, might prohibit someone like that from having that second job and causing a loss of income and all the problems that would come along with that.
Right. Yes, exactly.
We have a caller wants to get into the discussion. Let's bring in Scott. He's calling from Highland, Illinois. Scott, thanks for being with us. You are on the air with Jeff Larson of ProPublica.
Hi, thank you. I was calling because there are other issues besides just neighborhood that go into premiums. You know, a 16-year-old pays more than a 30-year-old, and a particular kind of car costs more or less than another kind of car. Is that figured in your report?
Yes, it is. It actually is. Oh, so the way that car insurance works, to get a little bit technical for you, is you start out with a base rate. So everybody gets charged, you know, $500. And then, for example, and then what they do is they increase or decrease your rate based on risk factors. So what we did in our report is we assumed, we investigated what would happen if you took a single person and you moved them around to all of the zip codes in a state. Right. So we only looked at a 30-year-old and a 30-year-old female who is a safe driver driving a safe car and found and tried to control for everything except for location.
OK. Wow. Thank you.
No problem.
Jeff, how did you and Consumer Reports get started in all of this?
Well, Consumer Reports had, we noticed that they had sort of a wealth of data because they wrote a story, I guess, in 2015 about car insurance, and it was a really fantastic story, and we thought to ourselves, well, you know, we're sort of doing this series this year about algorithms and the control that they have over our lives, and we've been covering it. My colleague Julie Anguin has been covering privacy and digital algorithms for a long time. And, you know, as we do at ProPublica, we reached out to them and said, we would really like to work with you guys on that fantastic data set that you have. So they collected premiums from a private company called Quadrant Information Services. And we spent, you know, almost a year and a half analyzing it and working with the car insurance industry, multiple rounds of analysis we sent to them and the insurance commissioners in the state and also academics. So we're really confident in our results.
And in terms of working together, precisely how do you do that? I mean, are you housed together during this or is it done by email? How do you make that happen?
It's a lot of like deep in the weeds technical emails that we send back and forth to each other, long common threads. I mean, they're just up in Yonkers and we're in New York City, so I would take the train up there about once a week, you know, sort of hash out our ideas. The editorial process was shared between both of us. You know, we had editors at ProPublica and we had editors at Consumer Reports. Mostly, you know, watching our backs and making sure that we got everything right. It was a very, very long, huge process.
How long did it take?
It took, we started with Consumer Reports in December of 2015, and we worked all through last year and finally published it last week.
Wow, that's a lot of time to devote to any kind of a story. That's really a luxury to be given that amount of time, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it comes with its own stress. You know, it's like running a marathon. We're constantly working on one thing, constantly refining the data, cleaning the data, working with the companies that provided us with the data, going back and forth with the insurance commissioners. And also, you know, flying out to talk to people on the ground. Even though, you know, we worked on it for a year and a half, it really does feel like, you know, I worked on 40 individual stories, right? Because we analyzed every single company in these four states.
Well, that kind of hard work certainly paid off yesterday in conjunction with the story you did with the Daily News, with that coveted Pulitzer Prize. I've got a couple of callers here, but I'm going to start with a tweet. Tom is writing us, I think it has a lot to do with theft and uninsured motorists. Geico, 50% cheaper when I moved to the city from St. Louis County. Credit score factor?
So the credit score is going to be taken into account when we ask what is the price for a single profile in each individual zip code. In terms of theft and uninsured motorists, we only looked at those portions of premiums that had to do with bodily injury and property damage. So car insurance companies will also provide you a quote for uninsured motorists, and theft falls under a portion of your premium that is called comprehensive insurance. And so we didn't actually look at those because he's right that they probably take into account things like crime rates, which is hard to compare across states and across jurisdictions in these four states. So to be clear, we only looked at the mandatory portion of car insurance, which is liability.
Piggybacking on this part of the subject matter, we'll bring in Mike calling from St. Louis. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Don. I think you actually just answered my question, which was if he looked at the crime data on auto vehicle theft and theft from motor vehicles, because that would be highly correlated with race, especially at the zip code and neighborhood level. But I think he just answered that. So,
I think he did. Thanks for the call. So let's bring in Jackie calling from Jennings. Jackie, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. My name, last name, definitely says that I am white. And unfortunately, it doesn't give me a break. I've watched the city go, you know, from all white to, oh gosh, I don't know what this 2010 census was, but it was like 90% in all the schools, 100% non-white.
You're talking about Jennings now, not the city of St. Louis.
And there is no way of getting a rate break, even if you're white in a particular zip code, or maybe unless you know some insurance person, maybe you could. Because I'm paying $573 without collision on a 22-year-old car, and I'm paying $1,200 for a one-bedroom house on my homeowner's.
Jackie, thank you for the call. Jeff, this is an interesting aspect of the story, talking about a white person in a neighborhood or a community, actually, that is basically a poor community.
Right. I mean, you know, when we defined minority neighborhoods in Illinois and Missouri as greater than 50% minority. So it's it disproportionately affects these disparities disproportionately affect minority communities. I live in Bed-Stuy, which is a historically black neighborhood. Of course, Caucasian folks also will live in those communities as well. So we're just looking at the disparities between these high density minority neighborhoods, but it's not 100%. Sure. Minority problem.
Sure, understand. Let's take another call. Cole joins us from Troy, Missouri. I hope this isn't repetitive. Let's see. Go ahead, Cole.
Yes, I had to turn my radio down to be on, so this question may have been covered. So since we've controlled for location, has the insurance company stated what it is within a location that defines the risk? Is it crime rate based? Is it overall driving of the people that live within the area? I know that nowadays your credit rating is actually taken into effect even on auto insurance. So have the insurance companies been forthcoming with how they actually assign risk per a zip code?
Yeah, we actually, we worked on this for a year and a half, and the first 6 months was basically understanding how insurance is priced. And there's sort of this idea that it's far more complex than it actually is. To be clear, we controlled for all other factors except for location. And in the California law was highly illuminating on how car insurance is priced. So what they're required to do in California, what car insurers are required to do in California, is fit their premiums to what's known as average loss, which is a measure of how much a particular car insurance expects to pay out for every single policy. And when we looked at that measure of risk, we still found these disparities. And they were especially stark in Illinois and Missouri. We found that, an African American or minority neighborhood was, especially a minority neighborhood with the same risk as a white neighborhood was more likely to have a higher price than have the same price as a white neighborhood. So when we control for all other factors except for location, when we allow location to vary, we see these disparities, and they're especially stark.
Very, very quickly, just 30 seconds left for our slot here. Any way to get around these disparities?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it could be that the Insurance Institute is right and there's, you know, internal data that does it. I think California actually has a very very strong regulatory regime that tries to control for these things. And it does look like the regulation in California is helping control these disparities. There are a number of companies that didn't have any sort of, like, variation whatsoever between the two.
I've got to leave it there, Jeff Larson.
Yeah,
thank
no
you
problem.
So much for being with us, ProPublica. Great work on a very important subject. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Every day this week on this program, we're featuring a short excerpt of St. Louis Public Radio's multi-part podcast called The Millennium Mayor. It's about St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay's record 16 years in office. Today's second episode is about his impact on education.
On April 8th, 2003, a slate of four candidates, backed by Mayor Francis Slay, won seats on the board of the St. Louis Public Schools. Slay was the chair of the committee that chose the candidates, and he also campaigned on their behalf.
This is a really watershed moment for the school board and the public schools in general in the city.
Now, if you fast forward 4 years, it seems the mayor's watershed moment didn't quite work out the way he wanted it.
What's happened in the past has not worked. What's going on right now is not working. This governance model has failed the kids for far too long.
So the solution to the mayor was to ask state officials for help, and in 2007, the state of Missouri took over St. Louis Public Schools. This is The Millennium Mayor, an exploration of Francis Slay's legacy in St. Louis. I'm your host, Rachel Lippman. On this episode, we're going to examine education in the city and how it changed under Mayor Slay. And to do that, we need St. Louis Public Radio's education reporter, Camille Phillips.
There is much more to the story of the mayor and education, including his support for charter schools and his use of the bully pulpit to support public school improvements. You're invited to listen to the full Millennium Mayor podcast at stlpublicradio.org or search for it wherever you get your podcasts. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.